on the other hand, there's always a certain, there's a growing percentage of people getting interested in learning about things that will really be helpful to them, or stimulating things that will stimulate their mind. That often happens to me, and like I say, it's sometimes distracting, but I try to narrow it down to anything that takes my time, something that I might, you know, put in the back of my mind that I might use sometime. You know, I think this could be useful. And I think this will gear our thinking in the new age, where we'll think, well, I have this free time, so I'm going to learn this art, or I'm going to take this acting course, or I'm going to take this drawing course, or I'm going to learn about history in ancient Egypt, or whatever interests us, so many things to learn. And especially when you're involved in a group and you do it in a group setting, and the group setting will be different, because we'll have actual virtual classrooms, to the point to where, say, you're in a class of 20 students. You know, you'll be able to see all their faces on a big screen, which you could probably have a screen as big as that wall, as big as this whole wall here, you know, and have it projected as a hologram. You could see all the 20 students, and if you want to talk to one, you can call, say, George, I've got this, and all the 20 students will hear you as you speak, and they'll be able to see you as you're speaking, and it'll be just like you're really there almost. And I see this happening through the evolution of the internet, and I think it's going to lead to a lot more in, like say, in the realm of education, where people are going to be acquire a great interest in learning from each other. And then when you learn enough so that you can be a teacher, then you will teach. And I see this in the New Age developing a lot. Now, people, in the ideal society, people will not be told what they have to be, but they'll be able to select their vocation. And there is always things more desirable than others. You know, like on the lower end of the spectrum, the garbage collector, the disc digger, those are things that nobody ever wants to be. Now, I don't know if all the undesirable occupations can be eliminated, but if, let's say, you didn't acquire any major skill in the New Age, you're kind of lazy, so the only thing available is, you know, they haven't perfected collecting trash yet, so you got to go, that job is available. Now, on the positive side, you only got to do it for 20 hours. You don't have to work full time. So after working 20 hours a week, garbage collecting, you think, well, I don't want to do this forever, and I got quite a bit of free time because I'm only working 20 hours a week, so I'm going to learn a skill. So this gives him time to learn something more useful so he can advance from garbage collector up to something, computer programmer or something like that, something more fun.
Garbage man attitude.
Garbage in, garbage out, huh?
Jason, question.
Yeah.
What does a society that you envision like that do with people that choose not to volunteer for the essential services?
That's a really good question. Rob asked, in the ideal society, what if somebody's so lazy they just don't want to volunteer? Okay, well, then they do not become a citizen. They do not maintain their citizenship. And they don't get the advantages of the society. What?
Can they still pay for the services that
no.
they do want?
No, there's no money. No money. Okay.
Basically, they would have to leave the society then because they couldn't get anything that they needed?
Right, there's several things that could be done. But see, if the person, very few people will do that because you reach the point, you only got to work 20 hours a week, and then you think, well, you know, I need to eat and need a house, so I guess I'm going to do some service. And so it forces him into doing some service. Now, if somebody's handicapped or something like that, of course, they wouldn't have to do anything they can't do, you know.
But
But even a lot of people that are handicapped, I told the story a while back about when I was selling advertising in the 70s, I called this gal up. I was calling businesses out of the phone book. I called this gal up. I didn't realize it was a handicap organization. And she says, "Well, yeah, we don't have any money, but we sure could use your help." I said, "Really, what you got going there?" And she explained to me. So I went over and paid her a visit. And what was interesting about her name was, I can't remember her last name, her name was Helen, and she was blind herself and had a terminal brain tumor. Yet she was heading up this organization to help these severely handicapped people. And, yeah, she says, "We need some money to keep our organization going." I said, "Well, doesn't the state help you out? Because I'm familiar with another handicapped group that's getting money from the state, and they're building the... They're making these brooms and so on." She says, "Yeah, that's for people that are just not severely handicapped." She says, "My people are severely handicapped." I says, "Really?" So she took me on a tour. And, boy, everybody there was in really bad shape. And some of the guys were around the table, and they made these little toys and stuff that were pretty easy to make. But for these guys, it was a struggle, you know. And so she introduced me to this one guy, and this one guy, you know, he looked like that guy a little bit, and anybody see the show My Left Foot? You know, he was in a lot worse shape than this guy. You know, he was like this, you know, and he looked like he was mentally retarded too, you know. And she says, she kind of read my mind, and she says, "He's just as smart as you and I are." You know, he says the poor guy fell off a cliff and broke half the bones in his body and is you know, barely survived. I says, "Well, what can this guy do?" And he says, "Well, you can talk to him if you want." I says, "Well, how am I going to talk to him?" She says, "See that alphabet in front of him?" He says, he can take his finger and point to the various letters and spell out answers. I says, "Really?" So I asked him a couple of questions, and he could barely, it was a struggle for him to even move his finger around. I go like that, you know, and point to the various letters and spell them out to me, and he probably would love to have old Stephen Hawking's device where he could speak with a computer aid. But that was before they had computers. And I says, "You telling me that this guy wants to work?" She says, "Yeah, he wants to work more than anything in the world. He doesn't like being useless." I says, "Really?" So that's amazing. And she showed me a bunch of other people like that in similar conditions. She says, "All these guys here," and there was about 30 of them there. She says, "All these guys, they really want to work, but the state is just thinks they're too far gone and not worth putting any money on." I says, "Really, that's really sad." And so anyway, she asked for my help, and I was kind of hurting myself at the time, but I kind of stopped what I was doing, and I organized an auction for them. And we got contacted businesses in the area and had them donate different things. And then after a couple of weeks, we had a big auction and raised some money for them and helped them out a little bit anyway. But the thing that amazed me about that was that everybody wants to be of service somehow. And even that guy, he only had just a little bit of movement in one arm. I don't know how he was even going to participate in making the toys. I didn't ask, but he wanted to work, you know. And I thought, boy, it'd be nice if, you know, the kids we're raising in this generation was motivated to work as these people here are, you know. And but anyway, I run into her a number of times over the years, and she lived amazingly long time, figuring everything that was wrong with her. She was quite the little gal. And like I say, she was blind herself and had a terminal brain tumor, yet she was the one heading everything up, you know. She was quite the little gal. But everybody wants to be of service. If they don't have this desire, it's because it's kicked out of them somehow, or because they're just programmed wrong, you know. And kids are really easy to program wrong. I used to sell children's books, and children's books was a funny thing to sell, because when I'd meet, I'd usually give like maybe two or three presentations an evening. And it's when I was in the house for, it only took about 30 seconds being in the house, I could tell how good the parents were. With a good parent, you know, if the kid was misbehaving, the dad would say, "Johnny," and the kid would say, "Oh, okay," you know, and he would just snap right in line. I have to tell you one funny experience. I had these great big pictures of the books, and it looked like we were giving away the Library of Congress by the time we were done. We had about six different sets of books all together, and each set of books was a picture bigger than this board right here. Great, it was called a broadside. And we'd throw out this picture on their floor, and then throw out another picture on their floor, and we'd have their whole living room floor, and sometimes their hallway, just covered up with books. And boy, they really thought they were getting the Library of Congress. And then as a sales point, we'd say, "Well, look at all these books. How much do you think they're worth?" "Thousands and thousands." And it was kind of illusionary, because the pictures were so big, it made it look like they were getting a lot more stuff than they were really getting, you know. But it was a pretty good deal. But by the time we were done with the sales pitch, they just thought, "Boy, there's so much stuff here, there's no way I can afford it." Then when we got down to the payment plan, they were amazed, and they'd buy them if they could, you know. Anyway, I started putting all these broadsides out, and they were expensive because the salesman had to buy them themselves, and if they got destroyed, we had to reorder them, and they were pretty pricey. I think it was about $10 a piece way back in the 70s when I was doing it, you know. So I had these broadsides up. This little kid come by, and he wasn't the first one, but I remember this particular one because he's particularly aggravating. And he came in with a little tricycle and started riding back and forth on this expensive broadside. And I looked at the parents, and the mother says, "Boy, I don't know what's getting into Johnny." He says, "Johnny, why are you destroying this man's stuff?" And he's just riding back and forth, you know, going crazy. And the father says, yeah, he's usually not quite this bad. Johnny, why are you destroying that man's stuff?" And I said, "Here, let me help." And I pick him up and I pull him off. And I come back and I try to continue. He comes back. "Boy, we don't understand Johnny today. Johnny, why are you destroying that man's stuff?" I wasn't so mad at the kid. The kid was aggravating, but the parents, I felt like taking them and slapping them. I thought, "How are you raising this kid?" And I had to physically pull him up about six times and take him over to the hallway and try to send him down the hall. But it was amazing how... Now, that kid probably doesn't have much of a chance in the world until he gets some type of enlightenment going, because his parents are certainly sending him the wrong message. But in the ideal society, I visualize there won't be kids like that. And there won't be parents like that. Yeah, we have the same thing in our office sometimes. We'll have people come in with kids, and Artie can tell stories about this. They'll come in with kids, and they'll put the kid down, and we have a bunch of samples of pens and advertising specialties in display and stuff. They'll get into them and they'll start pulling them apart, and we'll have to go grab the kid. And, you know, the parents don't do anything. They'll say, "Why are you destroying that guy's stuff?" You know, they don't word it that way, but they'll say, "Oh, I don't know what's getting into Johnny here." So what I usually did with them is... we had a candy machine there, and I'd spend a quarter and buy him some candy and just give it to him. You know, it was worth a quarter. It took the kid about 5 or 10 minutes to eat the candy, so that kept him out of our hair. And then we hurried with the customer to try to get rid of him.